From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 19th day of November 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the cash grain side of the situation with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Along the way, we'll check in on the weather forecast with the guys up at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. I'll bring you the agricultural news for the afternoon, and we'll hear all about the Gettysburg Address. It is the 19th day of November, the day that Abraham Lincoln delivered that famous speech in 1863. And we'll do all of that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to talk about what happened in Chicago. But first, Kurt, I know you won't be there tomorrow, but you're probably gearing up along with Pete Manhart for the Farm Assets Conference just around the corner from you there in Normal, Illinois. Thanks to you and Pete and to everybody else for all the support as we head into what I think should be a really great day there. I'm looking forward to having Pete on our Outlook panel.
Yeah, what a great event. I wish I could be there, but I got to hold down the floor here while Pete's there. But we're sending Pete with a whole bunch of information, a wealth of information. So be sure to ask him any question you have on your mind. I'm sure he could answer it for you.
Okay, so a couple of things for those who have not signed up yet. And I know I sent a newsletter out yesterday morning, and it said you could sign up through the noon hour. I know that's open to it. At least 4:50 this afternoon, because I control when we shut that down. And I checked actually with WILL to make sure what time they wanted to pull those. So you can still get things paid for there online at Farm Assets Conference, willag.org, and just pay online with a credit card. However, if you want to walk in tomorrow, you're welcome. Credit card, check or cash. But if you bring cash, do bring $40. It just makes things a whole lot easier. And hey, the ATM spit out $20 bills all the time anyway. So you can come tomorrow, but make sure you're there for the event. If you come, 8 o'clock a.m. is the start of the Illinois Corn Growers Association Conference. And breakfast is served with that. You can spend an hour, hour and a half with them, and then drop into the Farm Assets Conference. You'll come out. They're right next to each other. You'll come out of one door and come into the Farm Assets Conference. Get yourself checked in there, and you'll get your lunch on the parking all day long, and we'll have just a great event. I can't tell you how impactful I think this one's going to be. I hope I'm really right, but you need to be there. So Farm Assets Conference tomorrow. If you've not seen all the details, they're online at Farm Assets Conference. Kind of a rough weekend, and when you heard all the news coming out of Washington, D.C. and Beijing, it just seemed like, to me at least, Kurt, that it was telegraphing it was not going to be a pretty day for the soybeans, and we ended up down about 18 cents. Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah, we went home positive with positive news from President Trump. We call him good cop. Then the bad cop talked over the weekend, Vice President Pence, and, you know, some of his comments was a little concerning, suggesting China was a military threat in the region and some other things. And so the trade interpreted as negative. And we didn't see any new sales for, say, in the soybean complex. And outside markets were real soft during the trading session, with the Dow down over 500 points, energy markets fairly weak. And so that just kind of tripped the sell programs as we sort of drifted to some longer-term support levels that we need to see try to hold here. Hopefully Wayne will tweet Washington here this afternoon and try to get some positive news going for him for a turnaround Tuesday tomorrow, and see a little recovery as we approach the shortened holiday weekend week here. Wednesday's regular trade, no market Thursday. Of course, on Friday, most markets close at noon. Also on Friday, we have option expiration. It's mainly focused on the corn options. The December corn options expire, so I don't know if we're going to migrate towards this 360 area, or hopefully maybe take a little charge up towards 370. But there's a lot of corn calls out there. They want to expire worthless. So once we get that option expiration out of the way here, maybe we can see some strength in her. Oftentimes when the bears have Thanksgiving, the bulls will have Christmas. So take note of that and see if we can't have a little change of attitude. This afternoon's harvest progress, report here in the East, not really a major event, but as a nation, 91% is expected for corn, 93% as a nation is expected for beans. Still seeing some areas that's got some crop to get out yet. Even portions, spotty portions, southern Illinois and so forth, still kind of struggling here, trying to wrap things up. This is going to take a little time with the weather we're faced with here, Todd.
Of course, the good cop, bad cop is in preparation for the G20 meeting in Argentina. Do we think there will be anything substantial come from the Trump-Xi meeting there, or is it or not? Do we just have any idea?
No, it's hard to say. I would think he would love to come out of there with another book, Art of the Deal version 2, and have something in progress. But I think both sides have a pretty stubborn stance or legitimate concerns. So it's going to take a lot of work if they're really going to make any major progress. I think the main thing is keep the dialogue open between the two countries and take baby steps would probably be the best we could hope for as we move forward here.
What are producers talking to you about at this point? Are they worried about which crop they need to sell for end of the year cash and payments for seed for next year, those sorts of things? And if so, what are you telling them to do?
That's a great question. Guys are fairly well where they are. Want to be right now from the standpoint they either stored it or sold some. So we're starting to enter the mode here is what we're going to do towards year end here. And obviously, I think we're kind of in the mode here to see the seasonal tendencies to firm into mid to late December, kind of target that window to get caught up on some sales. And that's probably going to be our best basis opportunities because after the first year, we're in guys wanting to, you know, kind of clean up some or start to clean up some piles of corn or corn that's in some bags. So I think we're going to see quite a bit of movement here after the first of the year. Even having guys starting to look at 19 production, when you look out to 19, the DEIS-19 futures back above $4 offers some opportunity. The November 19 beans back up towards the 9.5. Guys seem to be pushing pencil on beans, and $9 plus cash beans seems to be a starting point. So each operation's a little bit different at these levels. It's not enough, but I think as we look forward here, there can be some opportunities to at least put some price floors in, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much. Have a great Thanksgiving, and tell Pete we're looking forward to seeing him tomorrow at the Farm Assets Conference.
You too. Take care. Thank you much.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, the Environmental Working Group, or EWG, has made public the names of ag producers receiving payments through USDA's Trade Assistance Package. The group filed a FOIA, or FOIA, request in late September to obtain the names and addresses of trade aid recipients and how much money each is getting. EWG's disclosure is likely to cover a fraction only of total recipients, since most of the $4.7 billion that USDA set aside for the first round of direct payments is still sitting in federal coffers. EWG has frequently complained that city dwellers who don't live or work on farms often still receive farm subsidies. Today's data dump is expected to show plenty of trade aid payments flowing to residents of major metropolitan areas like New York and San Francisco. There's been some backlash against large ag companies, too, benefiting from other pieces of the trade assistance package, like the $1.2 billion commodity purchase program. USDA, by the way, canceled a $240,000 contract with Smithfield Foods after public complaints that the Chinese-owned pork processing giant was set to receive taxpayer funds that were intended to help U.S. farmers and ranchers suffering from Beijing's retaliatory duties. Well, let's stay in Washington, but switch to the Farm Bill. The moment of truth is almost upon Farm Bill negotiators as they race against the clock to bridge remaining differences and still pass a final compromise in the lame duck Congress. A deal could come this week, or talks could fall apart, but both parties and both sides of the Capitol are desperate for a last-minute deal instead of having a new divided Congress start from scratch. The National Corn Growers Association, Sam Willett, is hopeful differences over payment limits, conservation, forest logging rules, and crop insurance discounts can be bridged.
I don't think any of these ideas or these changes are insurmountable because there had been a number of counteroffers to address some of the concerns, objections that had been raised by each party.
And while negotiators and staff insisted last week a deal was very close, none materialized by Friday, even as the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Mike Conaway of Texas, a Republican, reportedly dropped tighter House food stamp work requirements. Incoming House Ag Chair Colin Peterson said the new goal was to have a deal this week, despite lingering differences like Senate payment limits long sought by Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley.
There was more in the 2014 Farm Bill than there is in Conway's approach to it in the House bill, where there's no limits whatsoever.
However, Conway was resistant to some of the changes, especially relaxing limits on the number of farm managers who can claim up to $125,000 a year in farm subsidies. Grassley's Senate provision limits eligibility to just one actively engaged manager. Other differences to be bridged: the Senate's reduced earnings limit for farm program eligibility, the House's ending of CSP, or the Conservation Stewardship Program, and House forest management provisions key for fire prevention and possibly cooperative member insurance premium discounts. All of that's on the docket as the clock ticks down towards another government funding shutdown threat, which would come the 7th of December, along with the need for the Farm Bill to be budget scored by that date, and perhaps just 3 legislative weeks left in the year. Let's stay with ag legislation, but move to the update of NAFTA, or the North American Free Trade Agreement, which could be called the USMCA if President Trump gets his way. That stands, of course, for U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. The new North American Trade Pact is drawing fire from the right and the left. Liberals say they want tougher environmental protections and higher labor standards in Mexico, while conservatives are protesting new protections in the deal for LGBT workers. And finally today, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention last week issued new data and retracted a widely cited 2016 report that mistakenly said farmers had the highest rate of suicide of any U.S. worker in 2012. After a data entry problem was corrected, construction and extraction workers, like miners, had the highest suicide rate in 2012 and again in 2015. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, it was 155 years ago today that President Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address. The Civil War had entered its third year, and for 3 days, more than 90,000 soldiers from the Army of the Potomac and about 75,000 troops from the Army of Northern Virginia had fought at a crossroads in Pennsylvania's fruit-growing hill country. The clash between the Union and Confederate soldiers in the market town of Gettysburg stands as the largest land battle ever fought in the Western Hemisphere. Now, on this day in history, President Lincoln came to the site to consecrate a cemetery in their honor. The brief Gettysburg Address marked a defining moment in the Civil War. Here's my reading of that famous speech. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we're engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives, that that nation might live. It's altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our power to add or detract.
or the world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
President Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address on November the 19th, 1863. We're now joined by Greg Johnson of the Andersons to take a look at what's been happening in the cash grain market. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for being with us. All done here in East Central Illinois. I know we've been out of the field, but I think most everything's now all cleaned up.
99.5%. There's still a few fields left, but the vast majority of it is done. We're waiting for the weather to either freeze or dry out to get those last few fields out. But by and large, we're basically done.
Actually, and I should make note that's highly unusual, and I did make note there are quite a few fields around here. When you talk to the grain elevators or hear what's happening around the rest of the Midwest, are there quite a few fields left to bring in?
I think so. I think west of the Mississippi, there was still 20% of the crop left to go as of Monday. When we see the numbers today, I think we'll be, 90-92%, but that still leaves 7 or 8% left to go. So, in the big picture, it's probably not enough to move the market, but if you're one of those 7 or 8% guys that still have corn or beans left in the field, it certainly is an impactful factor.
Yeah, that'll be a tough slog for them. What does basis look like for both corn and soybeans?
Basis continues to keep improving since harvest is pretty much wrapped up around here. It's not anywhere close to what it is historically, but corn basis has probably improved 10 cents this week. The processors improved 2 weeks ago, and so now that's trickled down to the elevators. So we've seen basis levels for corn improve about 10 cents, and basis levels improve about 10 cents as well for soybeans in the past week.
And soybeans remain very wide, though.
Oh, yes, and corn, too, for that matter. Not as wide as the beans. Beans are historically wide, but we're starting to see improvement. We saw 70, 75 under during the gut slot of harvest, and now we're seeing 50 to 55 under. So it's 55 under is still wide, but it's not as bad as 75, and hopefully it'll continue to get better.
Have the bags in the field scared the industry very much?
Well, I think it's proven that farmers will do whatever it takes to, respond to a wide basis level situation. I think you'll see more storage built, permanent storage built in the way of bins. Farmers do not want to deliver corn at 40 under or beans at 70 under. And I think the bags are an indication of that. And I think we'll see, more bins bought and maybe even more baggers bought next year if it looks like we have another big crop and basis levels tend to widen out again next year.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn today is 345, January 351. Cash beans are 819, January 825. Cash wheat 483, and new crop 502.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this 19th day of November. It's a Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He is at Brisk Pulse in Chicago. Mark, thanks so much for being with us. Can you start with those drought-ravaged areas of California where the fires have just decimated so many communities? Is there relief in the way of rainfall coming for them?
Well, Todd, there is relief on the way, which is shaping up to be the first major storm system of the fall moving into the West Coast, and that's going to be taking place during the second half of this week. Across Northern California, where we have the campfire taking place, rainfall totals will be on the order of 1 to maybe even over 2 inches of rainfall. And even in the Southern California and some of the wildfires in around the LA region, such as the Hill and Wolseley wildfires of late, rainfall totals will be lighter compared to Northern California, a quarter to half an inch. But with these rain events, they will certainly help to basically extinguish the wildfires. But we do note that in some of the areas with heavier rain, i.e. areas of Northern California, some of those burn scar areas could actually be at risk for some mudslides, which tends to happen when you get heavy rains over these burned out areas. So kind of a mixed blessing, if you would, here coming up. And overall, it continues just to be a pretty crazy situation there out across California with the pattern of late.
You know, I'd like to explore this just a little bit because I've heard things like 200 days without rainfall in that camp area in near Paradise, California. And then, you know, 5 years worth of drought. The rainfall you're talking about isn't a drought ender, but it apparently will be heavy enough to soak things down and may dislodge hillsides, I suppose, now that those are scarred and open. What kind of assessment do you have of just the drought that's taken place?
Yeah, well, they've gone through ebbs and flows with drought conditions and wet conditions over the past several years. Now, you take things back 5 and 10 years, certainly more drought years versus wet years, but you only go back a couple of winters ago where they had basically a record wet winter, and that's actually been one of the main reasons why things are as bad as they quickly has gone into drought. There's a lot of brush there, which actually expanded because of the wet winter and grew and now is dried out and not kindling for fire in the current drought conditions. And like you said, now going forward, these rains will help improve, but they're not a drought ender.
And let's move here to the Midwest and the rest of the nation as Thanksgiving is on Thursday. What do you see for our forecast that day?
Well, the highlight here for later on this week is the strong Arctic air mass that's going to be at least the core of it moving into the northeastern U.S., but we're going to be affected here in the Midwest. Our coldest day is actually going to be on Wednesday, but for Thanksgiving here coming up, temperatures will begin to start to return close to a bit more seasonal levels, but still slightly cooler than normal, highs in the 30s, minimum temperatures in the 20s. Warmer temperatures are then expected shortly thereafter over the upcoming holiday weekend.
And finally, turn your attention to South America. They've had a really good start to their growing season. Do you expect it to continue in that fashion?
Yeah, Todd, we do see favorable weather continuing across South America over the next couple of weeks. The most active conditions will be across central and northern Brazil. That will continue to replenish and add more soil moisture to much of central and northern Brazil. Argentina and far southern Brazil will be less active compared to what they have been, but overall their soil moisture is in really good shape, and without any kind of extreme heat, generally favorable growing conditions will persist at least into the early part of December.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.